Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
Oh, and here is what's happening Tuesday, February 12th, 2019, on the 72nd episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Wow.
Brady Wright here, as usual, just oozing class and sophistication. Our master mechanic and metal butcher, Shane Osborne, is not here tonight because in the Northwest, in case you're not following the news and the weather forecasts, we have lots and lots of snow. It's actually a 27-year blizzard conditions over here, and Shane has trees down over the street that he has to get out of his house from, so he's not showing up tonight. However, Steve, the producer, Johan, who drives the fastest snowblower on his block, is here, and we got back to the blacktop first, where we check out the latest happenings in the automotive world. Steve, what you got?
Well, you know, I just want to segue into what we were just talking about, that snow.
Oh, yeah.
Now, there's a lot of people that live on the East Coast. Some of them listen to our show, and they're like, you guys, you don't know how to drive in snow. And it's like, true, because back there, once it hits, they salt, they snow blow, they do everything. Out here, it takes 3 days before the cities decide, it looks like there's enough snow, and then they start going out plowing, and they always play catch-up. So consequently, the roads are really crappy until about a week into it, and even then, the side roads, once you get off the main roads, are pretty slick.
Well, it's easy to say that, and that is true as far as it goes. However, the Puget Sound area has one particular characteristic that doesn't occur anywhere else. We are the second hilliest metropolitan area in the entire country. The only area that has more hills than we do is San Francisco. And since we don't get snow that often, the infrastructure isn't there. We don't have that many plows.
We
don't have
that
many sanding trucks. So when it does snow, people understand what a convergence zone is. We have areas that change elevation between sea level and 900 to 1,000 feet In four blocks. And there's also pressure, high and low pressure areas that swirl around in between there, added to the fact we have a gigantic sound of water in between us and
in the mountains.
Two ranges of mountains
We're
sandwiched in between. So when snow happens here...
Actually, three ranges, range.
Sort of, but I mean, we're in between the Olympics and the Cascades, and both of those are high. They're 14,000 foot mountains up there. And it's not a good place to drive. We get a lot of flack sometimes from people who are on flatter areas who say, we should be able to drive in the snow. You know what? You can't. Come on over, give it a shot. When you start losing traction going down a 16% grade, which is not uncommon in Seattle at all, you are not going to stop.
No.
You are going to slide down the hill until you either hit something solid or end up in the bay. And it happens all the time. So it's a difficult place to be, and that's why Shane's not going to be here. Shane, if anybody could get here, Shane would, but you can't
drive.
He's
out in the boonies already.
Well, that's just it, and you can't drive over 34-inch trees.
No.
You know, I don't care what you got. So anyway, we'll manage to get here.
We heard cracking last night. My wife's like, is that a tree? And I'm like, no, it's just the snow coming down from hitting the top of whatever in the backyard.
Yeah. Well, there's branches down all over the place.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Branches as thick as your arm or your leg, and, you know, the trees get a snow load. They can't take it. The branch comes down, and then
the road. 18 inches here total, maybe.
I've got a foot at my place. I'm
foot,
in town.
Yes.
Shane had 30 at his place. He's out
30,
of ways.
Yes.
Yeah, and if you, I mean,
Squim got
we're talking
30.
Within an hour of the city in just about any direction. You've got 2 feet.
Yes.
You know, everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's ugly. And then it gets better because in about a week and a half or two, most of that's going to start to melt. And when it does, we're going to have flooding. Welcome to busted gutters.
It's already started.
Septic tanks will now be at street level. It's not going to be pretty at all.
Well, I'm going to segue into something that people who do have a lot of snow, and that's Germany.
Yes.
And they produce the BMW.
Why, yes, they do.
Well, BMW is working to hit the 200-mile-per-hour plus car zone with their BMW lineup, the M7 model. The M option is coming out and is going to try to hit over 200 miles per hour this thing.
They can play catch-up.
And they got the B7s, the Alpina B7s.
Yep.
And
that's a long-honored name of BMW, too. They had the Alpinas back in the 60s.
Yeah.
60s and 70s. Always a nice performance vehicle. Or their performance model or package, I guess, is more accurate.
And they say the 2020 Alpina B7 adds even more luxurious details to the latest and hits 60 in more than 3.5 seconds.
That's respectable.
Is that as fast as the one that we were talking about?
From last week. The Hellcat.
Impala.
The Impala will do the old Impala. No, it's a 442. The old 442 would do it in 4.2.
Oh, okay.
But the Hellcat beats it in 3.7.
Okay, so this is 3.5, and it's going
still
to go
moving.
205 mile per hour.
Two tenths of a second. I'm not going to argue much.
No.
I mean, that's
but I don't think they're going to be doing that in the snow.
I'd pay to see that.
I would. Well, maybe on a commercial near you.
Yeah, sure.
They'll get that guy that does all the weird stuff. Alfa Romeo is celebrating its spider with 15-vehicle limited production run because they're not making a lot of these things.
No.
And they got the 4C Spider, only 15 vehicles. So they've revealed it at the Chicago Auto Show. So if you're really into the Alfa Romeo 4C Spider, check it out, 2020. I think it's really cool, but 15 cars, maybe that's a specialization they're going to do.
You know,
boom out the mark and then move on.
Well, it's a high dollar, very exclusive sort of run at that level. Last week we were talking about the Hispano Suiza.
That's
and
right.
And how, touching.
And they're going electric
gonna,
with that.
Well, right. And so in 2010, the last time they introduced a specialty high-end car was in 2010. They had it at Geneva. And the car then was $749,000,
right?
And they never even made public the customer list, which they don't have to. But they said the run was pretty short, you know, like 30 or 35
right.
of these. And who in 2010 had $750,000 to dump on a, you know, a toy. But, I got a silhouette. I said I would look. I have a silhouette of the new proposed electric Hispano Suiza.
Wow.
And it's on our Facebook page right now.
Because I was looking for it, and I couldn't find any more information on it.
I put it up there today. I finally
found it.
Yeah, so it's there now. It looks pretty swoopy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got three. Yeah. It's basically three curves. And it's very nice. Yeah, it looks, it's kind of sexy, you know? It's automotive sexy.
Oh, that's great.
But it's on the
that's
Facebook great. Page. If you go there, you'll see.
Maybe they'll let us have a test drive. We'll talk about it on the show.
Yeah. Hello, sir. Can we please test drive your $40 million car?
Yeah.
Promise we won't hurt it.
Well, we might be able to test drive the Mazda. Well, they're celebrating 30th anniversary of the Miata Roadster. Remember that thing came
out?
Yeah,
sure. No, Miatas, they seem like Miatas.
And you know what's so cool about them is they came out and they started a new trend. They went back to the Triumphs and the all that kind of styling with
two-seater
that car.
Front engine,
two-seater
rear-wheel drive.
That's right.
Yeah, the whole 9 yards.
And boy, all the baby boomers at that time were like, woohoo! They went out
and
bought
cars.
Them. And
still a good car.
They are. And it kind of birthed the whole new genre of cars. Remember the MR2? Was that the Pontiac
the
MR2?
Mr. 2, yeah. Yes. That was less than fun, but an interesting piece
yeah.
of work.
It was their trying to their derivation
they're trying.
Of it. But anyways, good congratulations. 30 years on the Mazda Miata. I think that's really cool. And you know, when you think about certain cars, we talked about the van, the minivan that
the
Chrysler
Dodge,
came out
Dodge
with
Caravan,
and how that changed
Chrysler.
Everything.
Town
and the Miata is another one of those cars that just came out and the next thing you know is everybody's going, wow, that's really a cool idea.
You know it's a success when the kit car guys start making kits to put on that chassis.
Oh,
you know?
Yes.
Same thing with the Fieros. You know, by itself, but an awful lot of kit cars were
the
put
Fiero,
on Fieros. And Volkswagens, too, you know, stuff like that. Yeah.
Yep, that was another one. And then GM is banking on former Warhead manufacturer to help guide their ship. General Motors is adding the former CEO of Global Aerospace and defense giant to its board of directors. Monday, this Wes Bush, that's his name, chairman of Northrop Grumman, you know, the guys that make tons of money on, well, never mind, we're going to politics.
Military
there.
Armament.
Yes, board of directors will become a GM director, expanding the size of the board by 13, up to 13. I don't know what that has to do with GM, but, you know, I guess GM used to make tanks way back in the day.
Well, sure, during the war.
During the war effort.
All kinds of stuff.
Maybe they're going to get into maybe making something else. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, maybe they're going to take advantage of some military technology and add it to
the
vehicle line, which would be awesome. That, you know, so many
it would
of
be
the
good
technological
to use it for a positive purpose
advantages
rather than negative one.
Come from military stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's where you learn that stuff.
Well, you got your Jeeps. Look at the Jeeps.
That's right. That's right.
The Willys.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But current Jeep doesn't look like a Willys.
Not so much. Hey, we're glad you're with us. We're done yapping now. Coming up, we got a chance to yak with the founder of Cruisin' Northwest and a first look at upcoming car shows in the season. All of that and more on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Okay, forest animals, kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay, squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
Hey, car enthusiast. Are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive.
Well, we are back with the second segment of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Time for the windshield view, which is where we get to talk to all kinds of cool folks that have to do with our hobby. And this week, we have with us in the palatial HC&R studios, Jeff Cook, who's the founder of Cruisin' Northwest Community on Facebook. How goes it, Jeff? Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Thanks for rolling out the red carpet. I really appreciate the limo with all the snow out there.
It was our pleasure. You know, did you have enough orange juice with enough drinks in there? The hostess, was she okay for you?
Yeah. Well, is Olga or Helga? What was her name?
Arnold, I think it was. But it's okay.
Watch the armpits.
As long as you were happy, that's all that matters.
I guess he had a lot of those orange drinks.
I don't know. Yeah, it's
Helga.
I didn't put anything in
Arnold.
There. It was just regular orange juice. It was just fine. Glad to have you here. So for those who are not familiar, and you will be shortly, Cruisin' Northwest is a Facebook page that concentrates mostly, if you had to describe it in one sentence, what would you say?
Boy,
you don't have to stick with one sentence, but I'm
yeah, I've been practicing all day for lots of long sentences. Nostalgia, I suppose. Nostalgia of the cruising scene in the Seattle area, specifically Colby Avenue, Alki, the Renton Loop, Lake City Way, that sort of thing. Trying to get pictures, trying to get video, trying to get stories of all those great, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, but it's a little bit kind of transitioned into keeping track of the more modern, car culture,
sure,
car shows, and cruising in quotes now isn't what cruising used to be, but
that's true.
Well, it was in the 80s, I guess it was maybe late 80s or mid 80s, they put the kibosh on this stuff. I remember when I was probably mid 80s, my buddy and I, we came back from a motorcycle ride, and we came up from the south end, and we popped in on in Alki Point. We were doing the Alki Drive along there, and there was a bunch of cars and stuff. And this was in the summer, and I had my helmet flap up but no glasses on, and I got pulled over. And, hey, you're not wearing eye protection. And I'm like, what's all this about? We don't want you down here. And they got really hardcore. Any little teeny infraction, they were writing up tickets because they wanted literally nobody down there.
Well, the reasons, of course, back in the 80s, and it really started in the 70s, late 70s, but it was a time when the local city fathers and law enforcement guys were directed to keep kids from gathering and creating a nuisance, which is their general rule for you can't have any fun. Because, like so many other cities in the country, during that time, if you had a car and you had a couple of friends, you went someplace else where other people with cars and friends were, and you hung out and you talked and you ate burgers and you laughed and you joked and you did stuff. And sometimes you did stuff that might have conceivably been marginally legal. I mean, you know, shredding an entire tire or five was considered fun. But that's also testosterone and hormones and other stuff like that when you're a kid. Who has not done that? But the city fathers decided, and they did in so many other cities as well, that they're just going to put a little bit of a damper on that stuff. But to Jeff's point, there's a lot of, you know, memories and records in people's heads of all of those old cruising days. And like so many other cities, we had a lot of areas here where they were kind of, that was the cruising spot, that was the hangout spot, that was the street racing spot. And unfortunately, before the internet, not a lot of that stuff got pictorially saved or video saved. So finding those things, and I have to give you full kudos, because the Facebook page, there's a video section and there's also a picture section, and there's a lot, there's a quite a number of you know, old pictures. But I'm going to take the opportunity right now to just say, listen, if you're listening to this and you have any records of any of the old cruise-in spots or any of the happenings that went on in the 60s, 70s, 80s around the Seattle Pacific Northwest area.
Hey, let's
area,
include Bellingham.
Or anywhere in the county, in the country.
In the country.
If you have them, send them to Cruisin' Northwest's Facebook page. Jeff will kill himself, figuratively, to get them up on the page so that they can be shared by everybody, because there's precious few of those. The things that are happening now, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, that's easy because everybody's got a camera and their phone and everybody's got video and all that stuff. That's easy. But the old stuff is really great, you know, to try to have, and it should be preserved, and Jeff is doing a, you know, good job giving that a try.
And so, Jeff, I want to back up a little bit and let you have a little chance to talk, because Brady and I could talk all night about those things. But
it's not our page.
What was your impetus for starting this in the first place?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that question. And I don't want to take over and
no,
talk,
no, it's you, it's
talk
all you.
Too
go
long.
Go ahead, but, please.
You know, we've seen the movies, you know, Hollywood Nights, American Graffiti, stuff like that. And, you know, I grew up in Southern California, and those movies, as great as they are, they don't hold a candle to what Colby Avenue was like in its heyday, or Alki was out of control. And I grew up here in Seattle, moved to San Diego when I was about 12. And coming back to Seattle after being in California, I did not want to come back to rainy Seattle. I was just, you had to drag me back here, right?
Yes.
But I got here, and I had a bunch of guys tell me about Colby Avenue, and I said, yeah, it's Seattle. It's going to suck. I don't want to see it. And I went up there, and it blew my mind.
Yeah.
I mean,
what age were you at that point?
I was about 20.
Okay.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah.
And it would take you an hour, you know, an hour and a half on a Friday summer night to get from one end of Colby to the other.
Yeah.
And it was just, I mean, it was like, you talk about speed dating. I mean, I wasn't the type of person to hang out in a bar, but I mean, you would pull up and say, hey, you know, nice blower motor, or and you go to the next guy and you say, hey, nice bikini top. And then the next car would be, wow, what year is that Charger?
Yeah,
the next car would be, oh, it's a T-Bucket or it's a 57.
Always a conversation starter.
Yeah. It's just, and that, and you had two lanes going each way.
Yep.
You got parking on the side. You got the old Everett Theater there. And the whole town is just buzzing with life. I mean,
It was literally the scene from American Graffiti.
It was.
But bigger and longer. There, some places in Seattle were just excellent for that kind of thing.
It amazed me back in the day. I mean, I cruised Colby in the rain, in the snow, on holidays. You know, I mean, it was pretty much, you know, every weekend for a year. I mean, conservatively, I figure the earliest I've talked to anybody who cruised there was 1957. So, you know, mid 50s.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And I think it didn't die till, you know, about, you know, late 80s, early 90s, till they finally killed it. You know, so, I mean, a hot spot like that, that's for 30-plus years, that's amazing.
Interestingly enough, they shut down Colby, which, just for those who are listening outside the Puget Sound area, Colby is the main street in the city of Everett, which is about 20 miles north of the city of Seattle.
Is that 99?
No, 99 is farther.
Parallels
99.
Yeah, runs north and south, but it's in the main drag. The bottom line is they shut down Colby cruising before they shut down the cruising through the University District in Seattle or Alki Point in Seattle. Both of those were a result of the curbing of the cruising in Colby. And there's nobody putting blame. It's just that somehow or another that was the impetus for doing that.
I wished I had known this. I grew up in Ferndale, which is 85 miles north of here, and we had Bellingham. That's where we cruised.
Right.
And
a lot of good cruising in Bellingham.
We had all the different drive-ins that you'd park at different ends of the city, and you had your Cornwall Park, and you had all this kind of thing that we went through, Herfies, and then you had bunks, and then you had one at the A&W, and then there were other parts you came along. But had we known, because there were times when, hey, I got a great idea. Let's head to Seattle and go for a cruise. So we'd get my buddy's 69SS, and we'd drive down to Seattle, get lost, and then wonder, I guess it's 12 o'clock. We better start heading home.
Yeah.
And then we head home. Had we known about the Colby, we would have pulled in there with his car or any of my friend's cars, and we would have, because that's closer than Seattle, we would have had a great time doing that. But we didn't know. We were up in that realm. And I think a lot of people, you grow up in your towns, you have the next door, the little city further beyond, you do that. But most of us didn't know that other people were doing this kind of thing in other areas. I didn't as a kid. I didn't think about that. You did. You went to California, you came back up. I went to Phoenix, Arizona in 78, went to school down there right after high school. Central, up and down on Friday and Saturday night was the cruising thing, and people would be parking, and you'd racing and stuff. And I got right into it. I was, 19, and I was still heavy into it. So, yes, I think if anybody, and I'm going to plug you, we've got to end up here real quick. We're going to wrap this up. But, folks, if you do have this information, we'll be on the other side. We'll tell you where to send it.
Yes. More with Jeff Cook coming up. Plus, we got another story from the old Car Nut books. Hang in. We'll be back. You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
More horsepower, chrome, and rust after these messages.
Attention men under the age of 35. You know what really impresses the ladies? When a guy has a few drinks and later gets pulled over for buzz driving. That could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Oh, I know. You drive more carefully when you're buzzed. You've proven that hundreds of times. A woman admires that kind of confidence. And you've practiced how to speak if a cop does pull you over. Slowly, clearly, and politely, like, "Good evening, officer." And what woman doesn't find it adorable that you call it buzzed even though the law calls it drunk? You could kiss $10,000 goodbye, along with any chance of having a girlfriend.
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving.
Hello, this is Zach with Cascade Campers. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
I'm jumping in with my clothes on!
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Well, speaking of Vehicle City, we're talking about cruising in this third segment of the show with Jeff, and his last name is Cook, and we just want to say, Jeff, thanks for coming on here. You're with Cruising Northwest, and what do you call it, Cruising Northwest?
Cruising Northwest on...
Community?
Yes, exactly.
Community on Facebook. And so, folks, go over there. As I was saying on the other side of the break, please, if you've got images, like we have a good friend, Lance Lambert, who took lots of pictures of his crew. But, folks, if you've got any kind of pictures of when you were a kid cruising with your friends, Most of us, like me, didn't even think to take pictures, but you got movies, anything like that. Please send them to this. Get on the Facebook, talk to Jeff, and let's get them loaded up there. And
there's already got quite a few good ones in there. Yeah. There's no doubt. As a matter of fact,
but I want to see hundreds.
I was, well, maybe close.
Me too.
I was going through the site earlier today and enjoying the pictures that you've got up there. And you've got actually a lot of pictures from people that we have talked with on the show. You've got stuff from Greg Gott and Lance Lambert. San Pauli's car is there, his 55. You've got Ron Foreman's car is up there, Larry Hansen and Bud Worley, a ton of others. And all kinds of runs. You got a separate video section or a picture and video section for Cruising to Colby. I think you got one for Greenwood. I know you got one for the Good Guys show. What are some of the others you've got on the site people want to check out?
Well, you know, just between me and you, I love all that eye candy. You know, the paint jobs, the sure. chrome, the workmanship. You know, it's amazing. But if we're really going to take a bath in nostalgia, you know, some of the stuff I love on there is I can't force people to send stuff, but the one thing I can do is I've done some research and I've dug into various newspapers and stuff, and I've accumulated a lot of clippings on there
that
tell the story of, you know, from the, if you want to call it the media's standpoint,
right,
you know, of how they were targeting Colby Cruisers and how they're shutting this down and how they're, you know, having these raids and that kind of stuff, and that tells you the kind of the background of it. There's a great, I think it was was it Eric Lacetus who did a cartoon of a 747 landing on Lake City Way? He said, "This isn't SeaTac."
and not much traffic.
I love that because there was just it was a big media event at the time when they tried to close down Colby and everybody was kind of shifting for alternate places. And Lake City for a time was that alternate place.
Lake City was a good one.
It was. They were bringing in police from all over the state to combat that, so it was a big deal.
Yeah, see, now I've got a couple of years on you guys. We started cruising, I'm going to date myself, it was 66, up and down University Way and Brooklyn, the streets that go next to the University of Washington campus. Lake City Way was a big one, which is a little bit farther north. Greenwood Avenue was a cruising place, but not a street racing place because there was too many streetlights. But Golden Gardens over on the water was a huge quarter mile, you know, craziness. And then there was Alki Point, which was a big kind of winding cruising spot that was just marvelous. California Avenue up in West Seattle was another one. And we used to make the run from Renton, which is at the south end of Lake Washington, 27 miles away from the north border of King County, and Everett, which was 14 miles north of the end of Lake Washington.
Right.
And that was a Friday and a Saturday night just going back and forth along that huge, probably a 35 or 40 mile loop.
Right.
One direction.
Yep.
Back and forth and back and forth until you ran out of gas, and then somebody came up with $2 and you went for another 3 hours.
Oh,
you
man.
Know? That was in the 60s and 70s. By the time late 70s and 80s came along, it was more of the same. But the cars started to change a little bit because when I first started doing it, a lot of your older cars, I mean, the Tri-5 was only about 10 years old, you know,
right.
Not even that in some cases. So, you know, the guys were driving cars from the 40s and even some 30s. There were some older hot rods that were great, bobbers and stuff like that. We didn't call them bobbers then. You called them junkers. But they were out there. And, you know, by the time you hit the 80s, then guys were driving cars from the 60s and 70s. I will never forget, very very quick, one of my friends in high school, this was 1968, he had been driving a 57 Chevy that he had all hotted up, and then he created the huge blasphemy of selling the 57 and buying a brand new 68 Dodge Coronet 440 when you could order off the menu, and he had the factory 426 Hemi and all that kind of stuff. He's a big sleeper, right? But it was a brand new car. You didn't think of it as a hot rod, except it ate everybody else on the planet. And now that car today would be worth, you know, tons of dough and cruising its life out.
So let's get back to your website, and I'm like you. I can see all the cars, but I like the stories. I like back in the day stories. I like, what was it like? That's why these movies that come out that are nostalgia, even TV shows that are nostalgic, the Mad Men. The reason why Mad Men was, I think, the one of the hits is I couldn't watch it after, you know, I don't know, 100 adultery affairs. It got sickening to me. But anyways, the era. You want to go back to the era. And people love these eras because it's a different time. Life wasn't any easier or any better or any worse. It was just a different era. And we could cruise. My kids don't know what cruising is. Talk about that.
Well, we were talking about movies either, and we're, you know, the studio here is all decorated with great Blast from the Past, you know, movie posters. And I'm so glad you asked that question, because when you talk cruising, you got to talk about American Graffiti, you know. And one of the subplots is Richard Dreyfuss chasing down, who was it?
Suzanne Summers.
The blonde, Suzanne Summers, yes. in the T-Bird, right?
With help from Wolfman Jack.
And I had that same, yeah, exactly. I had virtually that same experience on Colby, which is basically how Lake City Way came to be. And I'll tell you that story real quick.
Go for it.
I was up at the gas station one time just adjacent to Colby, and a girl came up, beautiful girl, kind of reminded me of Pamela Anderson, and she said, can you take me such and such, the bathroom here is open. I said, yes, I will.
Right.
So I took her to the bathroom, and, you know, she eventually, she thanked me, and she went on her way. She had a boyfriend at the time, and I spent months and months trying to find her.
Sure.
And I would go up there all the time trying to find that Mustang she was. Turned out to be her friend's car. And eventually, long story short, I was working at a Ford dealer one on the east side, and she came walking in. And I didn't recognize her at first, but when I figured out who it was, we were both, OMG, that's who you are. And I was like elated. Well, we were both longtime Colby fans. And when we put our heads together, we decided we needed to find a new place. Well, there's a couple guys, and this is also one of the clippings that I have posted on there.
Yeah.
A couple of guys had tried to get Lake City Way going as a cruise spot.
Right.
And they had a little flyer that I have a clipping of on the Seattle Times, and the flyer says, it's got a picture of a V8 Vega on there, and it says, Colby may be closed, but Lake City Way is WFO.
Ah.
And the guy who wrote the article says, you know, what is WFO? What? Well, it's a racing term.
Yeah. There you go. That's it.
So that lasted for a few weeks, and that was the spring of, I think, 1980.
Wow.
And then we put our heads together and said, we, you know, that was so big, we need to get that going again.
Sure.
So we put our heads together. I had a little art experience, so we made up some flyers, and four of us drove around in my truck one or two weekends, and we hit every high school north of Lake Washington.
Right.
Oh, that's a ton.
We all had a roll of tape and about 1,500 of those flyers.
Plastered all the telephone poles.
And that made Lake City Way go ballistic.
Excellent.
And there was thousands and thousands of
people.
Excellent. So the Suzanne Summers American Graffiti tie-in is kind of
prophetic.
We went down to Lake City Way to see what we had wrought.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should drop her name. Terry, the girl that was with me.
Right.
And I were sitting at Taco Bell, Taco Time.
One of them.
And of all the millions of possibilities, I mean, 1 in 100,000, you know, the Q13 news van pulled in, and they're looking for someone to interview. And they pull up, they put us in camera, said, how did you find out about this? And we're both sweating bullets because, I mean, every possible cop within 100 miles was there, and I couldn't tell her.
We did it.
It was us. Wonderful.
Yeah, that's a great story.
I love it.
And so now, is that story on your site? I mean, is that you've got it here, but is there any sort of document? Because the statute of limitations has finally run out. It's all gone.
Well, you know, I have a couple of people in the media that I reached out trying to get that tape because it's got to be out there somewhere. And I was hoping probably Q13 would have a database where you just type in something.
They'll
and find
have it in the archive. They charge you for going back about 8 years.
Yeah.
But yes, they probably would.
So I haven't been able to dig it up yet. But so far, it's just stories right
we
now.
We know a couple of people down there. Let's see what we can do. That would be great.
Well, what's interesting is, man, I've got flashes of all the chasing girls in the car.
Well, that
and
was
I
what
have a
cruising
friend of mine.
About.
I have a friend of mine. I haven't talked to him for years. He met his wife cruising.
Sure.
I mean, that's where they met. They were cruising, and he looked over and says, hey. Next thing you know, they started dating, and then they got married, and, you know, they're still together. So
it's a relationship built on, well, that.
I love that. That's that.
Well, they.
Absolutely.
Matter of fact, a good friend of mine and I were in a band together, and one of our songs was, it was kind of a back to remembering past times with your friend. And one of the lines was, you know, just cruising on a Friday night. And it was all related because he grew up in Everett. So it was, and I grew up in, like I said, Ferndale. And that's what you did in that era. You cruised in your car. You went to drive-in theaters. I mean, we would do the drive-in theater. That was part of the, in Bellingham.
With 20 guys in the trunk.
We would have the circuit. We would do the cruise. We'd go park at the Samish Twin Theater, and then we'd get out and go cruising some more, and it was just all part of growing up. And it, and so back to what you're doing here, how have you gotten people to, what are you doing to promote this? What are you doing to get people to send things to you?
Well, that's, as you can imagine, we talk about part of the beauty of back then is that not everybody had a phone in their pocket, you know, with a camera attached to it. You know, I carried around a VHS a video camera quite a bit, but that's, again, that's in the 80s. That's still 30
years. The 20-pounder.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
The size of a mailbox. But I've, you know, I've put ads on Craigslist. I reach out to all these different Facebook sites. And,
hopefully the
and
show here is going to help you out.
Post, yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. And put stuff on various, you know, YouTube commentary and stuff like that. Of course, there's the very successful Cruising to Colby car show, which is still ongoing, you know. And I tend to run into people. If you don't mind me waxing nostalgic again once more, I was up at one of those Cruising Colby shows, and this was probably 5 years ago. And we were sitting outside the big bar. There was beautiful. Show is on Memorial Day, and I was sitting out there talking to a bunch of friends, reminiscing, and I'm always, you know, complaining about it. I said, Cruising Colby isn't about sitting at a car show.
That's right.
Anybody can do this.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there, and I said, you know, one of the greatest memories of Colby that almost everybody remembers was a girl everybody called Colby Rose, and I don't remember what her real name was. I don't know if I haven't actually met her, but she used to always ride shotgun in a black Corvette, and that Corvette was you know, infamous up there as a fast car. And I was telling stories about that Corvette sitting in the outside bar right on the street, literally on Colby. And I said, and there's this guy with a black 69 Charger that used to always hang out with him. And the guy behind me, the table, is looking at me, and he goes, it wasn't black, it was dark green. And I said, how do you know that? He goes, that was my car.
Ah, cool. Excellent.
And I still know the guy at the Corvette.
That's awesome. You know, it's stuff like that that makes websites and Facebook pages like yours that worth going to and checking out. And I have to say again, you have a lot of really great pictures and a lot of really cool videos from the things. Are there things you'd like to have on there that you don't have yet? What's your future for the site?
Well, doesn't everybody love a good romance story? I mean, you know, you love a big dual quad or a top loader 4-speed, a rock crusher, whatever. But you know, there's always got to have that, you know, the opposite sex, you know. And I love those stories about I met my wife there, or I met my painter there, or whoever does my body work, you know. But I have got, you know, after 10-15 years of cruising there with a big, you know, when I first went out there, we had a gang of like 12 guys, different cars, you know, that went up there. And you can imagine I've got tons of stories we could tell, but, you know, I want to hear other people's stories, you know? So, I mean, you know, video says it. I mean, that's kind of the media of the day. I mean, everybody's got a YouTube channel, you know, so there's lots of that. And I'd like to see those too, but, you know, it's converting it into a digital format that you can post on Facebook. That's part of the problem. And for anybody who's interested, if you have a VHS or if you have a hard copy photo, I can scan them, I can convert them into an MPG or an AVI, you know, whatever format.
So they could message you on Facebook or just get you right on the page and work that through with you.
There's an extra step for like an 8mm film or something like that.
Well, that would be awesome.
It would. And not only just the Colby, but if other locations, if somebody's got pictures of when they were, and mostly when they're cruising, it has to be something to do with their cruising. We got a picture of the restaurant or the drive-in that we used to hang out in, or this is my crew. We used to hang out together and stuff. That's the kind of thing you want in there. And then the stories. Would you like people to share stories as well?
You know, like you said, I mean, there's not just Colby was my favorite, but I mean, Alki, you know, I would go to Colby and be there till 1 or 2 a.m.
Sure.
And I'd get up in the morning, I'd go down to Alki. And Alki, you know, there you've got bikinis and beach volleyball suntan lotion, and it's a little bit different, but you had all the parallel parking and all these little essentially 40s and 50s houses, which are now big mega condos.
Right.
Oh, yeah. So
the whole vibe of it has completely changed. But
well, and they did the same thing in Golden Gardens. It was another sort of set by the water kind of a thing. with the big park, and there was a marina, and you know, it was each one of those locations had kind of its own personality. I think it's just excellent that you're putting together the program and the page, and we are going to link it to our site. No doubt, there's going to be plenty of opportunity for people to get in touch with you. I want to thank you for coming, Jeff. It's just been cool. We could easily do this for another 2 or 3 hours, but the music says we're just about out. So. We'll put all your information up on our page, and I just want to remind everybody you're listening to the greatest automotive info show in the known world, Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. We've got a really cool hot rod story you can tell your friends coming up next.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life. Young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones you're used to.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Hey, car enthusiast, are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest-growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
This is Cody with Bow Wow Air-Cooled. You're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you.
When it comes to saving money, don't act like a baby.
Goo goo gaga.
Be the boss and make a budget.
I'm the boss, baby.
You're the boss of me.
I am the boss of you.
Are not.
M2.
Are not.
M2.
Need a little help?
Aren't you going to do any work?
I'm very busy delegating.
Create a personalized savings plan.
We can share.
You obviously didn't go to business school.
And get other tools and tips at feedthepig.org.
Welcome back to the fourth segment of the show. This is Cars Confidential, where we share all kinds of hot rod stories. This week, Brady has one of the old car nut book stories, of course. Which story are we going to do today?
Well, today, boys and girls, we have a story from the old car nut book, number one. I like this one because
there's
a lot of...
number one.
Numero uno. There's a lot of really good stories in here, and most of them are short enough that we can do. Although, I have to take a moment and plug David Dickinson, who's compiled all of these stories. It's a lot like what we were talking about with Jeff Cook. Instead of pictures, David compiles stories, and he got enough of them from everybody he knew that he ended up publishing 3 books. This one is from book one. The story is called Hot Car. It may not be what you think. And it's by Chris Kimball. Send it in. So here it goes. For several years, I had been eagerly awaiting the opening of the LeMay Car Museum in Tacoma, and during the first weekend in June, it finally happened. To demonstrate our ongoing support of the facility, I'm a Gold Key member of the museum, and my family has a commemorative tile located in the entryway. In the tile, in addition to the names of my family and me, I also included Panteras Northwest, since Panteras Northwest is a club-level member of the museum. Now, our club is fortunate that one of our members, Warren Lubro, is highly involved with America's Car Museum, as it's called, and he was able to arrange spaces for PNW members on the museum's front lawn during the grand opening. Imagine a whole bunch of De Tomaso Panteras.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be kind of cool. Not only that, he was kind enough to also find spots for my son, David, and his 81 Camaro, and Donald with his 90 Rover Mini. And I must say, it was truly a dream come true to have my sons there with me, each showing our own classic car. I can't help but think their cool car choices resulted from the trips David and Don each took with me to Pantera Owners Clubs of America fun rallies during their formative years. So a month or so prior to the event, I decided it was time to add the Pantera rocker panel decals to the car. And for reasons too numerous to list, I attempted to apply the decals in my driveway. After applying the driver's side stripes and lettering, I wasn't satisfied. There were several bubbles and a small tear which bugged me, so I ordered another set of decals, and when they arrived, I took my car to a local detail shop, and they did a marvelous job of applying both sides for a mere $120. Now, I was ready for the big show. So the appointed day arrived, and David's Camaro, Don's Mini, and Pandora had never looked better. We left early Sunday morning, and when I say early, I mean about 8:30. That's early for me. And our three-car parade made it to the museum with nary a hiccup. As I drove onto the show field, followed by David and Don, I slowed and rolled down the window to receive my goodie bag and pass. And as I burbled past one of the vendor booths, a gentleman commented on how great my car sounded. "Thanks," I said, forgetting the old adage about pride going before a fall. Not 30 seconds later, I heard somebody yell, "Fire!" "Oh no," I thought. "I hope it isn't a bad fire. I'd hate to see a beautiful car get damaged." It was then that I glanced in my rearview mirror and saw flames, thick, black smoke. I had a pretty good idea where it might have been coming from, because it was about 2 inches from my head, erupting from my very own engine compartment. Now, those of you who are not familiar with Panteras, they are mid-engine, so there wasn't a lot of space between between Chris and the blaze. So as people scurried about in search of a fire extinguisher, I grabbed the one I kept readily available between the seats, jumped out of the car, opened the deck lid, and sprayed the engine compartment between the engine and the fiberglass trunk. Fortunately, the fire was quenched almost immediately, although the adrenaline lived on. Once we knew it was safe, a group of LeMay volunteers and other drivers helped push Pandora and her now sheepish owner to the assigned spot on the field where she sat and smoked and stank. David and Don got their cars in position next to mine, which is what I hoped for, thanks to Warren, and I emptied the trunk, pulled out the tub, and braced myself for the carnage I expected to see. Imagine my surprise when I saw virtually no damage whatsoever. Years ago, I mounted a couple of auxiliary gauges on the right side of the engine cover, viewable from the driver's seat by looking over my right shoulder. They monitored the water pressure and oil pressure and water temperature. The small plastic tube running from the back of the block to the oil pressure gauge was the problem. The tube had somehow vibrated and fallen onto the passenger side header. Of course, as soon as that occurred, the plastic tube melted in half and began squirting hot oil on the header, which, along with the plastic tube, created the Dante-esque result. It's odd that the scenario never happened before. Sometime during the recent past, somebody must have knocked the plastic tube out of place. But with such a short distance between the flames and the gas tank, I was extremely thankful that my entire car didn't end up the subject of a song by Deep Purple, The Crazy World of Arthur Brown, The Doors, The Ohio Players, Bruce Springsteen, Johnny Cash, or Jerry Lee Lewis. Having one's car burned to the ground can really dampen the mood at a car museum's grand opening. I shudder to think what might have happened if the fire had started while I was on the freeway heading to the event or stopped at a busy intersection. Since Little May Museum doors didn't officially open until 10 a.m., I had time to clean the fire extinguisher's residue from the engine bay, and with a little sweat and then a lot of speed shine, by the time the first visitors arrived, my car looked pretty good. Of course, I had to hide the charred ends of the plastic tube. During the show, Warren took me into the bowels of the museum to search for parts that might allow Pandora to get home under her own power, but we couldn't find the correct size of brass plug that I needed to screw into the hole in the engine block. At this point, I was doubly glad that my sons were there. Don took me in his Mini to a local O'Reilly's auto parts store where I purchased the correct sized plug. A few minutes after arriving back at LeMay, Pandora was back to running condition. Now, following a great day of car gazing, both on the show field and in the museum, my sons and I made an uneventful trip home. A few days later, I bought a new oil pressure hose and fittings, and now things are just as they were, except the plastic tube is encased in a much thicker rubber hose and routed in such a way that it can never get close to the header. Now, if you have a chance, you must visit Tacoma and take a tour of America's Car Museum. It's spectacular, and even if Pandora's not there, you'll see a lot of hot cars.
I
was waiting for how he was going to do hot car out of that, and not bad. I'll give him points.
You know, that reminds me of a story. I was out with my buddy Mike, and Mike had a 68 Dodge Polara, and it may have been a 64. I think it was a 68, the dark blue kind of metallic, and it had a four-speed. And he and I would drive that. I'd drive it if he had his girlfriend with him, or he'd drive it. And one night, we were driving, cruising Bellingham, and all of a sudden, smoke's coming out of his front hood. We pull into a little mini market, And we popped the hood, and sure enough, there's little flames coming up.
Never a good thing.
The fuel line had sprung a leak.
Oh, you're lucky it didn't
go up completely. It's flaming, and somebody in the side, I guess, called, because by the time he's like, oh, what do I? Oh, he just pulls off his shirt and sticks it on there, and we stop it, you know. By this time, a fire truck shows up. And the fireman comes out, and he's like looking at it, and he goes, here, just a minute. And he went back, and he got a little pump water sprayer, little, you know, the old-fashioned kind, not even the
water extinguisher, you mean?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And he's like pumping, and he's putting water on.
But it's out now.
It's out.
Oh, it's nice of
him. And we're like, okay, thank you.
Squirt some in the carburetor while you're at it. Nice.
But I remember, he's like, well, I'll just kind of cool everything off here for you guys.
Well, it was nice of him.
And
I'm sure he
thank you very much. But yeah, I called up the police or the fire department, and sure enough, we were, and so we end up fixing it. You know, you splice it and stick it back together, and we ran fine. But yeah, it was a flaming, and I've seen that numerous times. Where that happens, because the hose gets a little hot.
In Chris's case, he was lucky enough to get the thing to David, and David put it in the book. And as we always say, the old Car Nut book is actually a series. There are three of them. You can get them on Amazon. You can go direct to theoldcarnutbook.com, and any one or all of them would make a great gift. I know Christmas is over, but Valentine's Day is coming, and somebody you love would love to have one of these books. And I want to thank David for letting us read them on the air, because they're a lot of fun. We do have a trivia question this week coming up, and this is going to be a really, really good one. And I have to say, for those who were listening last week, this week's trivia question was a trick question. And it turned out to be even more trick than we thought.
Oh, because we didn't get any responses?
Oh, no. We got responses.
Okay.
But you had to kind of pay attention.
Maybe we'll ask our guest who's sitting
in the
studio.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, Jeff, maybe he knows this one. This could be a good one.
Yeah. But, you know, I just, everybody has those stories of back in the day. And again, I just want to plug, if you guys got pictures of back in the day when you were cruising, send them to Jeff Cook over there at Cruising Northwest Community on Facebook. And so stick with us. We'll be right back with our last episode, or I should say last segment, and more of the show.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
Hang on till right after these messages.
Hey y'all, I'm Blake Shelton. I love that country music connects people all over this great nation, but unfortunately so does something else, childhood hunger. 15 million children struggle with hunger in America. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks works to rescue our surplus food to help provide billions of meals to families in need across the country. Join the fight against hunger at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
This is Donnie Smith. You've been listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Enjoy yourself.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Help us if you can. You're an El Camino, El Camino man. Only you can understand.
who in the world can understand an El Camino man? Well, Steve can be one, of course. Yes. This is the fifth, and it's the final segment of the show. This is Around the Wheel, and we talk about events and rallies and the upcoming club and cruise-in season in the Pacific Northwest and everywhere else in the country is going to be huge this year. It starts now. There's shows getting ready to hit. There's a swap meet getting ready to hit. February is a good. March is where everything starts.
Right
here.
March.
And it just goes forever. But we'll get to that in a second. We did have last week, I mentioned before the break, we had a great trivia question. And it was kind of a trick, but not as much as the question we're going to ask this coming week. Last week, the question was, what was the lowest priced mass-produced American car? That doesn't take a lot of gray matter. You're going to have to go back a ways because cars were cheaper, you know, when we first started doing cars. But the lowest priced mass-produced American car, we actually got a winner. We did. A fellow by the name of Con, I think it's probably Conway, Con Stapleton from South Dakota. He actually sent me an email and he said, oh, I know this because it was in 1925. He said his grandfather, great-grandfather, now I can't remember, an older member of his family had one. And it was the 1925 Ford Model T runabout. So Henry.
Oh, that's really old.
Henry was about it. But the brand new, were $260. Now, in 1925 money, that was
decent. You could buy a Harley for that price.
Well, yeah. But get this. In 1924, it was $5 more.
Oh, my God.
He reduced the price in 25. Who knows why? But there's a picture of it here. You can see it right there. And I'm holding it up to the microphone. If you look real carefully into the internet, you'll see this picture. No, you won't. But anyway, Con won. So, and as always, Con is the proud winner of his very own chrome-plated, gold-lettered, initialed bucket of Horsepower Chrome and Rust Barn Find Dust, which we have on the shelf, not 5 feet from me. And, of course, as everybody knows, you get the Barn Find Dust, you sprinkle it on any car you like, and it's immediately worth four times as much because they think they found it in a barn. This week's question is a good one. And there are several answers, but there's only one that actually works. And the reason is it depends on when you ask the question. If I asked it a year ago, it'd be a different answer. But this year...
You got to quit coming up with these really hard multi-choice questions.
This is fun. It's fun. What is the fastest, and by fastest I mean the highest top speed, the fastest American mass-produced production car, okay? It's got to be a production car. Can't be specialty cars because, you know, you could buy a Bugatti and do 700 miles an hour. But no, the fastest American production car, if you know it, you get with us. You can either send us an email at contactus@horsepowerchromeandrust.com. You can get on our Facebook page and give us a post. You can do whatever works for you to get to us. You can call me on the phone if you can find my phone number. But do that, and you too could win your very own bucket of Barn Find Dust. It's I can tell you the top speed that you're looking for. Would that help? You want a hint?
Yes, yes.
The top speed is 204 miles an hour.
Oh, that's why BMW is trying to come up with something that goes a little faster.
But it's not American produced.
I know, but I'm just saying that's that magic number.
Why wouldn't you want to do that?
How do you define mass produced? I mean, what is the, you know?
Well, you used to be able to buy a Shelby. Okay, you could buy a Cobra that would do that, but it wasn't mass produced. He made them one at a time. So this has got to be something you can buy off a dealer showroom.
You can't say
anything. No speculating because you start.
Yeah, and that's all right. You can speculate, but you can't do it on the air. but yeah, so if you know, get with us on one of those venues and let us know what it is. And you too, I'm reserving a bucket of Barn Find Dust for you right now.
Yes.
It could be yours. Imagine a pearl without price.
Oh, I just almost kicked the bucket there.
No, don't do that, man.
Yeah, it's right next to your foot over there.
It is. We use it as a doorstop when we're not doing something else with it.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to hearing that one. I've got an idea, but I may be wrong. I've been proven wrong before.
Not hardly ever. Hey, so as long as Jeff is still with us, what's the first big car show coming up? Quickly.
I would say the first car show of any kind, probably at the XXX Drive-In in Issaquah.
There you go. So go and enjoy. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to Jeff for coming in for Cruising Northwest. Check him out on Facebook. You can like and follow our page and every other one as well. For Shane Osborne and Steve Johann, I'm Brady Wright saying keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, and your foot to the floor. Next week, we'll knock the rust off another edition of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.